Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
The Goldilocks zone is actually when we are in that sweet spot of achieving full health. So anytime that Goldilocks zone is interrupted, it's the endocannabinoid system's job to send its workers out and start to correct these problems. It could be a respiratory issue, it could be an illness, like an infection, it doesn't matter. Our endocannabinoid system will still do what it can to try to help balance and regulate these feedback systems in our body through its uses and mechanisms. Overall, the goal is to maintain immune system health and perfect health. I believe in my last research, I discovered that the national nursing curriculum was going to start including the endocannabinoid system for nurses to have a better understanding of all this.
Okay, that's great. Hey everyone, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today and the opportunity to share a great conversation with you. I am super excited about this. I had a fantastic opportunity to sit down with Nathan Crotto. He is a cannabis nurse educator with Holistic Wellness Services, and he is a hemp farmer, so he has a myriad of experiences and education under his belt. So we talk about everything. We're going to touch on the different parts of the plant. You know, we hear about THC and CBD, but he's going to take you down just to have a basic kind of understanding that there's a lot more going on there than we typically hear about. We get to hear about his farm practices and what they do to create a really clean product. He talks about how to maybe check on the products that you're currently using or might be interested in, just to make sure that you are getting a pure and good product so you can have the best, of course, results that you're looking for and paying for. People have had some really amazing results with various things, and he's going to talk about some of what are people seeing, what are the benefits that they're having around pain and various, many other things. Anxiety, cancer, so many things, and why that might be. Why is it having the effects that we're seeing? He sheds some great light on that. And there's a lot that we know and there's a lot we don't know. And he talks a little bit about why the research is a little delayed on that as well. So we get to hear a little bit about the history too. If this is a topic you know a lot about, I think you're still going to get a lot out of this. Nate has a wealth of information and he speaks very candidly. And I really appreciate him sharing what he does know and what he's learning too. It's great. But if this is something you're not comfortable with or not familiar with, and I know, you know, we talk about the stigma as well. And I know there's some people who just really, even just the thought of it is just uncomfortable because of that stigma. So I encourage you to check it out. Listen to Nate. He's got just a ton of information just to have a little better understanding or a lot better understanding from the work that he's doing and his experiences. And for those of you new to the podcast or national and worldwide listeners, I just want to mention that he speaks when he speaks from the legalistic aspect. We're talking about U.S. laws and Minnesota laws. So just wanted to throw that out there. Before we dive in, I want to say thank you so much to all of you for listening. For those of you who share the podcast via Facebook, sending forward the email, or just letting people know the web address, please feel free to pass the podcast on, but also this episode, if there's somebody who has questions or just needs to know a little bit more about this option being out there, please don't hesitate to pass that along. Your sharing the episode, of course, gets it to the people who need it into more people's hands is always wonderful, because the great guests that I have, it's more of an opportunity for them to find the people for whom their information needs to speak. So thank you so very much for that. And thank you so very much to those of you who are part of my Patreon community, the Wellness Renaissance Patreon community. Thank you very much for supporting the podcast. It is really appreciated. It is helpful in keeping it going. This is just like anything else. There are basic costs. And your supporting on Patreon not only helps us pay for those costs and keep the podcast going, it also lets me know that you like what we're doing. So you can join Patreon for $1 a month to support the work that I'm doing here and be part of the mission of helping people find their best health. So thank you so much. You can do all of that at wellnessrenpodcast.com. wellnesspodcast.com. And don't forget to check out on Facebook too. I post everything on the Wellness Renaissance Facebook page, so you can find the episodes there. Please join the email list. We send out an email each week with the episode and the notes. Easy way to check in with the episodes and what's going on. If you have signed up and you haven't gotten an email, please do check your spam folder and unspam the address or add the address to your contact list. You're always welcome to email or check in on Facebook with any questions and feedback as well. All right, let's dive on in. I hope you enjoy this interview and this conversation as much as I did. I learned so much. Thank you for all the work you're doing, Nate, and it's exciting to see forward momentum happening and so many people being helped. This is great. Well, Nate, thank you. Welcome. Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance podcast. I'm excited. This is a subject I've been wanting to talk about for a really, really long time. And I'm excited about all the hands that you have in it, which is fantastic. So start by introducing yourself.
My name is Nathan Crotto, and by profession, I'm a nurse. I work in the home hospice field. That has nothing to do with what I actually do with cannabis and hemp and CBD and that kind of stuff, but that's where my passion lies, I guess, as a profession. I'm a father. I have 4 children, 10, 4, 3, and 1. A boy and 3 girls.
Nice.
And then my wife is Brianna. I consider myself a cannabis nurse educator. I've just learned so much at this point that I like to disseminate that knowledge. And I use that term because in some states where we have more of an established nursing profession, those are legitimate nursing jobs in those states.
Okay.
We don't quite have those things in Minnesota yet, yeah, but I'm trying to adopt that.
Okay. So. That's cool. That's interesting.
Yep.
I didn't know that. And I just want to touch on this because I just think it's fascinating. So before you were a nurse...
Before I was a nurse, I was a corrections officer for the state of Minnesota. I have a law enforcement degree as well as a nursing degree. And I did corrections work for about 6 years for the state of Minnesota.
It's an interesting path.
Yeah.
Corrections to nursing too.
You could talk to anybody in corrections, and corrections has its downfalls of stressors and things like that. And those kind of stressors of high anxiety, violence, drove me out of the field. It's just not somewhere I saw myself sitting for 30 years. So that's what prompted my career change, was to work in a less violent profession where people wanted my help.
Right. That's true. Yeah, because it sounds like it's a really interesting shift.
It is.
To go from that to nursing, because it's also very intense.
Equal intensity. Yeah. One example I like to use of people is when I was a corrections officer, the gap that stood between me and that person was a safety zone that I needed to keep to protect myself. And then when I transitioned into nursing, it was like, okay, everything that tells me to not get in the safety zone is now saying I need to be in the safety zone to properly care for somebody.
Uh-huh.
So it was a transition from corrections to nursing for me as far as that goes.
Wow, for sure.
And even sometimes today, I still take care of inmates who are in need of nursing care, and I have to be the nurse and not the corrections officer at that point. So I have those inner battles still, but I've adjusted.
Right. Yeah, that would be a huge shift.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. Very cool, though. Very cool. So that's how you got into this. Tell us what you do as a hemp farmer and what you're trying to create here.
Sure. So I'm a co-owner of a hemp farm that we call Holistic Wellness Services. It's in central Minnesota. We pretty much leave it at that. We're not quite ready to disclose our location because of security issues. We are growing what we call craft hemp CBD. And that means we are growing hemp plants individually in pots and not necessarily like row crops like a farmer would do. A lot of people are growing hemp in the nation as a row crop like corn, and they harvest it with machines and things like that. We're a different approach where we give our plants very much their own personal care. We meet each plant's needs as far as we see fit. As things change for nutrients and those kind of things, we're giving those plants care where we're making these plants really big. We're trying to get them as large as we can, and we're trying to like basically condense like what a row crop farmer would do into a smaller field area by the style that we're growing.
Okay.
So we grow with all natural products. We don't use any fertilizers or pesticides. We have all our products tested for impurities when they're made. But ultimately, we are looking to enter the wholesale market for the majority of our product, which means we're going to make a crude oil out of a ethanol extraction method. It's been in the cannabis industry for a while, but it's also been in like the herbal tincture industry too, as far as extracting with ethanol. Ethanol is a really clean product. It's food grade safe. So we take that and we do an extraction process, and then we sell what we call a crude oil on the wholesale market. And those people that are buying this crude oil will take and turn it into what products they see fit.
Okay.
We will also be making products, but our initial year, this is our first year of doing this, is more geared towards the wholesale market.
What got you into, what led you down this path?
So as a nurse, before being a home hospice nurse, I was an oncology nurse. And in the state of Minnesota, we do have a medical marijuana program. And our patients sometimes were on these programs from various states, Minnesota, Michigan. And I got to find out a lot of information from patients. We don't, as a nurse, I didn't get to handle those kind of medications with the patients, but I got to listen to their experiences. I have loved ones who have asked to remain anonymous who are enrolled in the medical marijuana program too, and I have firsthand got to see how those effects of medical marijuana have improved the quality of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Once I started seeing these opportunities for people to get a little reprieve from their problems in life, I was able to do my own research, and that kind of just spiraled out of control to how can I get involved in this. And that turned into making a team where we partnered with a farm, and we have now put this farm together, and we are in growing mode right now. We have plants in our greenhouse. We're getting ready to transplant to the fields. We're in a big kind of production mode right now.
It's so interesting to me, just the cultural, like, the cultural sort of blanket that is on the concept of medical marijuana. And like you're saying, people want to remain anonymous. And I know, you know, some people that I know are out, they're loud and proud, right?
I'm a loud and proud person,
right?
About this, yes.
And yeah. Some people are just so uncomfortable or fear the judgment.
There's a stigma that drives those concerns for people. Mm-hmm. We have a legal medical marijuana program in the state, and medical marijuana is different than hemp, but I'll kind of get to how that's all connected to. But the stigma really drives people to be quiet, and that's unfortunate. Because that, if we can get rid of that stigma, people can learn and have the opportunity to learn in a fear-free environment and actually see how it can help them without being skewed by like, no, this is, you know, some of those old terms was this is the devil's lettuce or however you want to look at it. And sometimes people hold on to those things forever, and that's how they always feel about it. We do have studies that show that things can work with the different components of the cannabis plant within our body to help us.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then we've got the states where, you know, it's legal. Just do what you want, you know, and you got your Willie Nelsons down to your, you know, don't tell anybody for whatever thing that you're using, just because, yeah, that stigma is so strong. And you're right. I think it does not allow as much education as there could be. And I think
definitely gets in the way.
Yeah. And there's so many people who are having such interesting responses. I mean, amazing, or if it's not, oh my gosh, amazing, it's, well, but this has taken and made this part of my life so much easier.
I'll never be the person that says that cannabis in any form is a cure-all for a person, but it can sure help in many different fashions alongside of different therapies, just like we use in the medical field, certain medications to go along with other medications to kind of help an overall effect. Cannabis can be one of those medications. When I say cannabis, I'm talking about marijuana and hemp. It's kind of all in the same family. So cannabis can be used alongside of other things like chemotherapy to kind of combat some of the negative effects of chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the difference between cannabis, hemp, CBD oil, and then I know there's other pieces and parts to this that we don't hear about.
Sure. So I like to use the example of apples. When you think of the general broad term of apples, underneath shooting out from apples is like crab apples, sweet apples, red apples. You know, they're all the apple varieties, but they're apples nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of cannabis is the overall plant that covers both marijuana definition and hemp definition. They are the same plant, but it's a legal definition of the THC level that turns something from hemp into marijuana. And that number for the federal system, USDA, and for the state is 0.3% THC by weight. So my hemp products have to be 0.3% or under to remain hemp. If I was to grow a plant that tested out over, like say that's 0.4%, I have grown essentially marijuana, according to that definition in the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is kind of the governing bill that changed things here, and it took hemp and it separated it from cannabis and marijuana by using this definition to kind of put it in its own category.
Okay.
So as a farmer who's licensed, I can grow this product, and we call it hot when it goes over 0.3%. And it is marijuana at that point, and I have to destroy my crop. The whole tested crop at that point. Wow. Like if I have different groupings or something, okay, that crop that tested hot would have to get destroyed.
Okay.
I have options to retest out of my own pocket and stuff to see if we can get new results through the same state testing protocols.
Okay.
But an average Joe who thinks that they can go and grow hemp right now without a license, you need a license to grow hemp. But if you were to grow without a license, even though it's hemp, 0.3% or less,
mm-hmm,
if you were found out to be growing hemp without a license, you could be considered growing marijuana at that point.
Wow.
So the license is a big deal too.
Okay.
A lot of people are confused with the Farm Bill coming out and kind of with the language in there. A lot of people think, I'm just allowed to grow hemp now. Each state has kind of like a pilot program that you got to apply for. And that pilot program kind of follows the USDA guidelines that aren't officially in place yet, but they're working on it.
Okay. So like you THC is the thing that you're trying to regulate the level of. So talk a little bit about THC, just to maybe anybody who doesn't understand what is the big deal about that? What does that do?
Absolutely. So THC is commonly, everybody knows THC is the product in the plant that gets you high. It's the psychoactive property of the plant. So people who traditionally smoke any kind of cannabis or hemp, they're a lot of times doing it to get high. And that's not the only way that we can have to ingest this plant. We can get a lot of benefits from this plant without actually getting high. And there's a huge group of people that are interested in this product that don't want to get high. They want the benefits from it, but they don't want to get high. No, a lot of people don't like that feeling of any loss of control like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, the actual definition of THC here is it's tetrahydrocannabinol. That's a big, long science word, but we'll call it THC from here on out. And THC is a cannabinoid in the plant. Cannabinoids are basically on the plant flower. The plant grows in two stages. There's a vegetative stage, and then it switches over into a flowering stage, and that's pretty much based off of like a photoperiod or amount of sunlight it receives. Once it receives a certain amount of sunlight in the less direction, it starts to change to this flowering mode. And as the flowers grow, there's resinous glands on the flowers called trichomes. And those trichomes contain the cannabinoids that we are after for our products.
Okay.
And other cannabinoids that people are commonly hearing is, of course, CBD. And there's more than just THC and CBD. There's a lot more, but those are the two most common ones. And CBD stands for, CBD is a cannabidiol, is the science term, I guess, for it. So those are the highly sought after products, I guess, in the plant.
Okay. And the other things that we don't hear about, the THC, the CBD, do they have value? Is it value we just don't see in them yet? Or is it that they're just parts that at this point we just don't know what benefits they have? Or
a little bit of all of that.
Okay.
So with prohibition, the plant was kind of a criminal aspect for many years, for 70 years or something like that. We didn't get to study marijuana because it was a Schedule 1 drug, and that meant there's no medicinal value for it, so no studies get to go into it. Not in the United States, at least. These studies happened overseas a lot in Israel. Israel is kind of the driving place where these studies are happening all over the place. So they're pretty progressive in their thinking towards cannabis in general. What was the second half of your question there?
Just what did those other pieces of the plants, besides the CBD?
So the other cannabinoids, so like when you think of THC and CBD, those are what we call decarboxylated forms of the cannabinoids in their raw form. So THCA is basically an acidic compound that's attached to the THC, so it's an overall different molecule. But after that product gets decarboxylated, which means heated up, it changes from THCA to THC. The same thing kind of happens with CBD. It was CBDA in its raw form, and now it's CBD after it's decarboxylated. And that could be through a processing, like at our farm, you know, we could do that process in like a heating mechanism, or traditionally somebody who smokes it is doing it right there with the lighter. Uh-huh. That heat exchange right there changes it. THCA has benefits. CBDA has benefits. These benefits, if you were a cancer patient, and I kind of say this off the books, and I wouldn't say this to any of my actual cancer patients because it's not in my scope of practice, I guess. Mm-hmm. But if I was to talk to somebody privately on the side and they were a cancer patient, I would encourage them to juice cannabis. Literally, like, take a fresh plant and juice it in their juicing machine. Put some other cucumbers and carrots, whatever you want with it, but you'll get that THCA, that CBDA, which are known to have like anti-inflammatory properties. They have anti-cancer effects. All this stuff is lightly studied now, so we can't sit here and say, here's the definitive study that proves this, mm-hmm. because of the prohibition kept it at bay for so long. But these other chemicals are very important. We look at making products now where maybe we combined products that have THCA, CBDA, and the decarboxylated forms of THC and CBD for just a broader effect, because they each have their own properties and values.
Okay, yeah. And when we think of historically, I mean, just because we don't understand something doesn't mean it doesn't have benefit, you know?
Yep.
Phytonutrients were garbage for a very long time, and still somebody said, wait a minute, these actually have benefits.
Exactly. Beyond those cannabinoids that I've talked about, THCA, THC, CBDA, CBD, there's another one called CBN that I find interesting because I think it kind of goes overlooked for some time, but it has it's basically THC that has been further decarboxylated, or maybe a good example is somebody has a bag of cannabis or hemp or whatever you want to call it, bought it off the black market, and it sat in their drawer for years because sometimes that just happens. The THC that would be in that product there has degraded over time into the CBN. And now CBN has its own, like, it's really sedative. It really makes you sleepy. So there's a value there that, you know, maybe somebody would find who with insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of legally harnessing that chemical. And that's another unregulated cannabinoid in the whole thing too. People are grabbing at these different cannabinoids that we don't know a lot yet about yet, and they're using them in their products, which I like, but at the same time I really like to know the science behind everything too, so mm-hmm. kind of makes me iffy on some of it, but it's promising.
One of the questions that I have is, one thing that you hear about sometimes is different strains, and, you know, if somebody is looking to have this purpose, they get, you know, and I don't know where, like, I think of this conversations of people who are actually smoking marijuana.
Sure.
So, yeah, they're looking for different outcomes, so there's different strains. What is the different strain? What does that mean?
So I think what you're referring to is typically people have you heard of indica and sativa in this realm of things?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so indica and sativa traditionally or historically have been two different kinds of strains of cannabis or marijuana. They're not very accurate anymore, but the idea was that indica was part of the Latin name, okay, of that part of the cannabis plant, and indica sounds like indicouch. So it makes you sit on your couch and kind of melt away. Yeah, it's kind of goofy, but sativa is the other end of things. It kind of gives you a more energetic, high feeling. But if you have a sativa plant that has low THC, you're not going to get a high feeling, but maybe energy from it. And there's other reasons why you're getting feelings of energy and stuff too, and those are involving terpenes, which I'm sure we'll move into here shortly.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, did I answer your question?
I think so. I was just curious because that's something I hear.
Let me further explain more on that, I guess. So okay. Nowadays, there has been so many hybrid plants, like crossbreeding of indica and sativa, that indica and sativa, in my mind, are kind of phased out, and we can't use those generalized terms anymore because it could inaccurately describe what the plant's effects are, I guess, as far as what people are holding on to. If you were to go to a store and buy a sativa strain, you think you're going to get energetic and stuff. That's not necessarily the case, because from what I understand, you can get a sativa strain that makes you just as tired as an indica strain because of all the crossbreeding and stuff that has gone along. Okay. And instead of using the word strain in the business, we use chemovar. And chemovar is more of a specific scientific term of kind of the lineage of that plant, I guess.
Okay, so it.
When you go to buy these plants nowadays, or the product made from these plants, a lot of times there's a certificate of analysis that goes with them that shows you terpenes and cannabinoids and things that are in that plant and how it's broken down. So you can really begin to understand what works best for you.
Okay, interesting.
Really interesting, yeah.
It's, yeah. Well, you just, like I say, you hear something about somebody, you know, if their anxiety is high, they want to get this kind. And if it's, they're looking for this, they get
sure. Very That's specifics. A good point right there. So what I know about anxiety, I'm a person who suffers from anxiety, so I find anxiety interesting. And that's how cannabis can help with that. And I take CBD, and CBD helps my anxiety. I know it does. It's not a cure-all. I still have to have coping mechanisms and stuff to go with it. Mm-hmm. But it helps. It definitely helps. People with anxiety shouldn't necessarily have high doses of THC, because that psychoactive compound can compound that anxiety feeling and make it worse for them. Interestingly enough, when somebody is having what we'll call a THC overdose, where they're, you've heard of somebody taking like an edible and kind of, you know, freaking out. Mm-hmm. You hear some of the stories of even like a police officer I heard called 911 and he thought him and his wife were dying.
Oh, no.
And they had overdosed on THC and they'd never done something like that before. And basically, CBD is now shown to work well with THC in many different aspects. But an interesting thing it does is it brings that, it balances that THC overload and brings it back down into more of a level playing field.
Okay.
When I send somebody to try to get products or they have questions about products, I really believe in a ratio of 1-to-1, one part CBD, one part THC. They should have equal ratios, and they work, in my mind, the best that way.
Okay.
And that has to do with what we call an entourage effect, and that is all the plant compounds working together for better benefit in your body. So terpenes, cannabinoids, all kind of play a role to work together in this overall picture to improve your picture.
Okay. And talk a little bit about terpenes, and since you mentioned that a couple times.
Sure. So terpenes are one of my favorite aspects of all this. You talk to people about cannabis and they, THC, CBD, cannabinoids, I think all that's great. But terpenes are fascinating to me because in the nursing field, I also use like essential oils and stuff like that, which is essentially terpenes from different plants.
Okay.
Terpenes are that the fragrance, the aromatic fragrance you get from the plant. But terpenes also have their own effect in our body. For example, myrcene is a terpene. Myrcene is a terpene that's often found in cannabis, and myrcene is a terpene that is known to help with like a sedative effect, helps you sleep. Myrcene, interestingly, is found in hops. So you have an IPA, which is kind of a hoppy beer, you're probably going to get a little sleepy from the myrcene in that. So when I talk about indica and sativa getting there, you know, indica's indica, which and sativa's energetic, that's not necessarily true, because that indica might have the same CBD THC ratio as that sativa plant, but their terpene profiles are so different that it's actually the terpene profile that's driving those little accessory feelings that you get.
Oh, wow.
So like, boy, this is really making me tired. Maybe it's got a really high level of myrcene in it. There's other terpenes too that maybe are more energetic, or they just add their own unique touch to the whole vibe that you get. I occasionally ingest CBD in the form of raw flower, as hemp flower. You couldn't tell the difference between hemp flower or cannabis flower by looking at it. And there's a THC difference there, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
A cop would have a hard time telling the difference. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get a single feeling of being high, but it calms me and soothes me. And even if it's a mindset, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm always a kind of a proponent of a placebo effect. If it works, awesome.
So,
yeah, I guess it's a wide world that hasn't been looked into too much, but terpenes are just fascinating because, like, peppermint's kind of a terpene from an essential oil from the plant, and we use peppermint, interestingly enough, to help men who are having urinary problems put it in the urinal and it helps them urinate. I don't understand it, but it's terpenes in effect there that are working.
Right.
So it's amazing to me how our bodies are just kind of adapted to work with these. And it's not only cannabis. There's tons of terpenes in other plants too. That broccoli's got, you know, its own aromatic aroma to it and stuff. And yeah, it's just, it's fascinating.
It's interesting to think that it has more of an effect on us. Like we think of lavender or something that you might put in a, you know, what are those called?
The diffusers.
The diffuser, thank you. Put in a diffuser because we know that it has this effect on us. But it's interesting because we don't always think about that when it comes to, like, say, food and other things that maybe have a little bit of a different or maybe not so much of an effect or whatever, but it's kind of curious.
So we both know Jan Tomeno, and she's all into those essential oils. So I'm going to say something here, and I hope she's not going to quote me and I'm wrong here. I think the lavender is a plant, obviously, but the terpene inside that, I believe, is something called linalool or something along that lines.
Okay.
So, yeah, you think you're giving a lavender essential oil, but there's a terpene within that essential oil that's giving it its...
That's the thing. That's what they're... That's why it takes so many plants or whatever to get that out, because you're trying to get that little piece.
Yep.
That's the piece that has the effect.
And there's actually, like, some companies that aren't interested in the cannabinoid profiles of the plants. They solely want to try to harvest the terpenes from the plants, too.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Have other countries studied this more than we have, or
I'm not sure on the terpene level.
Okay.
Good question. I would love to find some studies on more. So I could find studies on terpenes that aren't cannabis related. And sometimes those terpenes exist in cannabis, so I could use that study to kind of understand the terpene in cannabis as well. But it doesn't necessarily say that, you know, cannabis has been studied along with this terpene.
Gotcha.
You
know? Okay. Okay. The concept can flow.
You kind of bring them from different areas and, you know, bring them together and say, oh, I see what this picture looks like. But
Okay. And the cannabinoid system in our body.
Okay.
Talk about that a little bit, because that's something, it's funny, because I this is something we hear more often about the cannabinoid system, right?
It's growing in popularity.
Yes. And I heard somebody say one time, oh my gosh, is this just a made up thing that somebody came up with to have,
cannabis legal.
Right, exactly. Instead of like going, well, no, we figured out, you know, that this is having a reaction, and the reaction, I don't know which came first.
I'm going to reference my notes here a little
bit. All right, rock on.
All right. So the endocannabinoid system is what it's called.
Oh, yes, okay.
Endogenous cannabinoid system for the full length term, but we'll say endocannabinoid system for this purpose. Basically, every animal on Earth with a spine has an endocannabinoid system. So it's not just us that can benefit from, as humans, that can benefit from cannabis. They're already giving CBD to dogs all over the place. Horses can benefit. Cats, I guess, can benefit. Anything with a spine could essentially benefit. All our cattle and stuff, you know, they used to eat all these hemp grown in the field and the seeds and stuff from that. Their endocannabinoid system was fulfilled by ingesting these cannabinoids from the earth, basically. With all that gone, a lot of times we're having a deficiency with our endocannabinoid system. And I'll get into this now, but basically the endocannabinoid system, I will say ECS, I guess, to shorten that from here on out, it works on our bodies by establishing homeostasis. Are you familiar with that term? So homeostasis is basically when we have achieved our optimal level of health that we can achieve. The Goldilocks zone is actually when we are in that sweet spot of achieving full health. So anytime that Goldilocks zone is interrupted, it's the endocannabinoid system's job to send its workers out and start to correct these problems. It could be a respiratory issue, it could be an illness like an infection, it doesn't matter. Our endocannabinoid system will still do what it can to try to help balance and regulate these feedback systems in our body through its uses and mechanisms. Overall, the goal is to maintain immune system health and perfect health. So we don't know much about it. Even doctors don't know much about it as far as on the mass education level of things. There's plenty of doctors out there that are really familiar with the endocannabinoid system. I believe in my last research, I discovered that the national nursing curriculum was going to start including the endocannabinoid system for nurses to have a better understanding of all this.
Okay, that's great.
Okay, so there's a story about Goldilocks. That's why it's called the Goldilocks Zone. So the classic fairy tale illustrates the idea is that the best outcome often lies somewhere in the middle between two extremes. And that's what I mean, like, there's bad health, and there's good health, and maybe the endocannabinoid system can just get you in the middle of those, but it's doing the best that it can to mean to shoot to that gap of full health. You might not be able to get there, but your endocannabinoid system will always try to get you there.
Okay.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
There's components to the endocannabinoid system that I kind of want to get into as well. There's different receptors and enzymes and dysfunctions of that cannabinoid system that are really interesting to me as well.
Okay, go for it. Because, yeah, it's, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, again, when we're, because some of this stuff is just kind of like new to people, the language is new, then there's the stigma and all of that. But to me, it seems like it's just learning a deeper part of our body with, you know, we think of, like you were talking, enzymes. We produce enzymes to digest food that it allows us to use it. Or, you know, we have morphine receptors, or, you know, it's just another set of all of that.
Yep. So to break that down a little further, we have cannabinoids in our body that we naturally make, as well as there's cannabinoids in the plant, cannabis. But when you look at the cannabis cannabinoids, tongue twisters here, those are called phytocannabinoids. Like you said, phytonutrients earlier, same idea, phytocannabinoids, it's in the plant.
Okay.
Plant cannabinoids. We have endogenous cannabinoids with inside of us, or endocannabinoids. Endo means within.
Okay.
We don't produce THC in our body, but what we do produce in our body is called anandamide. And the THC will come in when we smoke it or ingest it, and it'll attach to the same receptor that anandamide would. However, in our bodies, we also have enzymes. These enzymes, just like anything else, are designed to break something down. Anandamide, when we produce it naturally, is kind of like a bliss molecule. It gives us brief moments of like, it feels good, you know, kind of. And then there's some anandamide being produced in those feel-good situations, like serotonin and stuff, but a different level, kind of. That enzyme that I'm referring to is FAAH. I don't even want to try to attempt the whole scientific name there. But FAAH will come in and break down anandamide just instantly. Once it's made, it's also broken down, kind of. You only get it for what you need it for, and then it's gone. A lot of other chemicals we store in our bodies for future use, but we don't do that with cannabinoids in our body. With that being said, THC then comes in, and it can't get broke down by the FAAH. It doesn't, and that's why a person, when they take and ingest THC, it lasts long.
Okay.
You know, it's not like a done and over thing. It's got a period of time where it sticks with you, and our bodies just aren't able to like kick that receptor off very well. But it's still stimulating the endocannabinoid system to do its thing. It's still connected to that receptor, and it's still giving the endocannabinoid system that juice it needs to perform that role. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. We make this bliss molecule that's broken down, and this cannabis plant has something that will just replace it, and for a longer period of time. We have two different kinds of receptors in our body, CB1 and CB2, and these are what our endocannabinoids in our body normally work with. But THC and CBD and different cannabinoids will come in and bind to these receptors. CBD doesn't necessarily bind to these receptors. CBD seems to be more of like a, I call it like a hall monitor.
Okay.
Hey, go over here and help. We need you over here.
Oh, interesting.
I'm going to open this door for you. I'm going to give you a hand over here fixing this thing. And it doesn't necessarily bind to these receptors directly, but it promotes that overall. It's so versatile. It can just go all over the place. And it has like anti-inflammatory properties. It's so diverse. It's kind of silly. I can't. Even though I call myself a cannabis nurse educator, I'm still learning so much as I go that this blows my mind how in-depth it can actually work in the body, and the more we find out.
You and the whole medical profession and everybody who's doing this, I mean, there's a lot to know, but there's a lot left to know, it seems like.
So these cannabinoid receptors, they sit on the surface of our cells, and they kind of listen to conditions outside the cell. They're listeners, looking for problems, looking to hear about something going wrong in the body. They transmit information about changing conditions to the inside of the cell, and then that kickstarts like the appropriate cellular response. Like that cannabinoid system is, hey, we gotta get working on this and fixing this. So it's like lighting the fire underneath somebody to do the work, kind of. Okay. The two major cannabinoid receptors are CB1 and CB2, but they're not the only ones. There's more that are being researched right now, but I'm not going to mention them until I understand more about them, I guess. CB1 receptors are the most abundant receptor, and they're located mostly in our brain. And these are the receptors that interact with the THC molecule to get people high, I guess.
Okay.
And that's why we get high, I guess, is a better way to put it, because the THC binds to the CB1 receptor, which is mostly located in our brain.
Okay.
The CB2 receptors are more abundant outside of the nervous system. And then in places like the immune system is where you'd find them a lot more. However, both receptors, like I said, can be found throughout the body. So there's only these two receptors that they really know a lot about right now, but there's a lot more coming down the line. I expect within the next 5 to 10 years, we have understanding of the endocannabinoid system will grow, I guess, in a way to include more information about it.
Okay. It's amazing what we have in our body going on that we still don't know about.
Yeah. It really is. Well, I mean, we would probably know a lot more if we never had prohibition, because cannabis was used as medicine for many, many years. I mean, you can find people collect all pharmacy bottles and stuff that say cannabis mixed with opioids, mixed, sorts of stuff mixed in one tincture. And it was like a child's medicine. You know, it's like, I know it's old school thinking and stuff, but it really existed as a form of medicine. And there's a lot of ideas why it went away. I'm not going to claim to know fact of what happened back then, but I hear theories about, you know, the paper industry was worried about hemp in general, not necessarily about cannabis, but they wanted to group hemp in with cannabis. It did get grouped with cannabis and eliminated or put into the Controlled Substance Act, and it looked like a drug, but people grew hemp for many, many years for fibers and seeds and things like that. The idea is that maybe the big paper industry had something to do with that, big pharma had something to do with that, all the conspiracy theories that go with that. They're interesting to me, but I take it is what it is, and now we're at this point where we get to learn more.
Right. What else can we do? Because I know I was in Colorado years ago, and that was like the first time I had, you know, hemp chips and like other hemp food that was available there. And yeah, and I remember talking to somebody about it. It was just the whole, this is insane. Why are we not doing this? The amount of benefit we have for what we can grow, and between ropes and clothes and paper and all of this stuff, that the sustainability is just so amazing.
It really is. I like to talk about the stat. I don't know if it's real or not or a fact, but they say the hemp, it grows to maturity in 100 days, but a tree grows to maturity in 100 years. So the yield from pulp off of hemp is a considerable better yield versus trees, and it's more efficient to get there. And people who are putting hemp in their fields, hemp sucks all the bad stuff out of the dirt. It really cleans dirt, it cleans air. So when you're like on our farm, that's a concern to us. We put our plants in containers. We don't want them growing into the ground. We want them growing in just our controlled soil and what we've put in there. Because what if there was something in the field, or you know what I mean, that it was a heavy metal or something that we don't want contaminating our plants?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I was like, well, if it does that, then what are we getting, you know?
And that's a big problem when people are buying products, too, because there's not a lot of regulation out there. People don't really know what they're buying half the time. I have bought products at the beginning of my journey into this that, holy cow, it has, like, carrier oils that are really unhealthy for you, or it wasn't tested for heavy metals and pesticides, but it gives you like the CBD THC percentage, I guess, you know. So I was disappointed. I went out to Colorado for a hemp convention, the Northern Colorado Hemp Convention, and I checked out some of these things at these different shops, and there's not actually like CBD shops like there is out here. It's all like dispensaries. So I go in the dispensaries, and you can find a few CBD products, I guess we'll call market research. But they don't list like the terpene profiles. They didn't list, and basically in the rec market, it sounded like pesticides and stuff could be used. I think that differs from the medical market out there too. Because you can walk into a store and, do you have your medical card? Or go this way to the rec market, or go this way to the medical side. And I didn't get to explore the medical side out there because, well, I'm not a medical marijuana patient out there.
Right.
But I was disappointed, and the lack of like terpene profiles listed, even like, when we talk about CBD and CBDA and THC, it was all THC based. It seemed to be like, here's our product and here's their THC levels, and that's how we want you to pick your product. Interestingly enough, there's these major cannabis conventions out in California. Cannabis cups, I think they're called.
Okay.
And the growers that seem to be winning these aren't the highest THC percentage growers. It's the growers that are hitting that one-to-one ratio. They might have a significantly lower THC percentage, but that combination of terpenes and cannabinoids, and so CBD and THC being one-to-one, somehow allows them to win these competitions.
Wow. And what are the competitions like measuring?
I haven't got to be part of one. I just read about them.
Okay.
But it sounds like they're measuring overall experience, overall vibe and feeling and comfort, taste. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of different categories, but overall, yeah, I think they're kind of getting, they're trying to get the whole picture of
that. Okay. What's the experience that you're creating with this? Okay. Interesting.
Which, it brings up a good point, like, me and you could consume the same product, but your endocannabinoid system in your body and your physiology and your needs, you might have a different receptor setup than I do in mine, and that product could affect you differently than it affects me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and we think about, we know that from drugs, you know, and, you know, I have a very different reaction to morphine than most anybody else. You know, it doesn't work. It makes me sick and I get no pain change at all, you know, and same thing with other drugs. Right. So we know that we all are affected differently.
I'm pretty narcotic naive. I got, not to feel bad for myself, I got hospitalized a few weeks ago. I had this thing called an omental infarction. You have this apron of fatty tissue that goes over your intestines, and somehow that I twisted it, and it kind of, part of the tissue died. And I tried to be tough. I don't necessarily like narcotics because I deal with patients who have such narcotic side effects in the cancer realm, hospice realm. You know, so it scares me. So finally, after the pain was too bad, I took a dose of, I think it was oxycodone, and a small dose, 5 milligram dose, and I'm a big guy. But I was just like, what was I thinking by trying to fight this pain? You know, I couldn't believe how well it took my pain away. So I'm a perfect example of someone being opposite than you, you know what I mean? So you could take that same thing and it's not going to work for you. But for me, at a 5 milligram dose, I was like, okay, you know.
Right?
I had to talk to my wife and I was just like, I got to be honest, I feel a little silly. You know, it's like, and I'm just real narcotic naive like that.
Right. So. Well, and all of the things that have happened around and with people, and
there's a stigma
that,
there, too.
Right, right, right. Exactly. It's interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what drug I took once, and I didn't do anything for the pain. I was flat on my back. It was just made me so dizzy, and that's all it did for me. So it's my stuff works different than most people's, you know?
I'm also that guy on a different level who could take a Benadryl and get knocked out.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then, like, somebody else might take a Benadryl and, yeah, that cleared up my symptoms just fine.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
For me, I'm like, I could probably, you know, take a 4-hour nap or something right now.
Oh. Well, and I think, you know, some aspects are applicable to understanding what we're talking about, right? It is the understanding that this isn't really different. It's different, but it's not so different. And I think because of the stigma, there are people who just, either they don't want anything to do with it, or you know, it's one of those things, it's one person at a time. They hear somebody, see somebody, oh my gosh, you know, a friend of mine who's an older lady, her daughter got her hold of some stuff for her, and she's got some major physical stuff, and she's like, oh my gosh, you know, this is amazing. This is, I'm feeling, you know, better in these ways. And she was just so quantifiable. And oh my gosh, for those kinds of results, you know, we credit a lot of drugs, we credit a lot of other things. This is an option that seems to be just doing amazing things for
people. We should talk about some of those ways that people are getting help.
Yes, please. Yeah.
So not, like, I'm going to refer a lot to cancer patients because that's kind of in my wheelhouse. Cancer patients go through chemotherapy. Chemotherapy can, depending on the chemotherapy, can bring on what's called chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. This is a nasty thing that happens to people. They try to prevent that from happening by loading people with, you know, different antiemetics and steroids and stuff like that to go along with their chemotherapy, but it doesn't always fix the problem. Cannabis, THC, CBD, both can kind of have their own properties that help, you know, get the nausea away. I know people who, from my younger days, I'll absolutely refer to them as potheads. they would go party in college. They would get a bad hangover, and they always told me, like, yeah, nothing works better than cannabis to cure a hangover. But what they're curing is the nausea that goes along with that. It took me a long time to realize what they were talking about, but they're literally, like, the nausea and vomiting that goes along with the hangover is poisoning in your body. It's alcohol poisoning. So chemo, you get, it's poisoning your body too, but it's poisoning it for a purpose of, you know, what we obviously need to get rid of the cancer kind of stuff, but it has lingering effects of nausea and vomiting, and that's where cannabis can help out with that situation too. There's legal drugs that have been made, synthetic drugs. So Marinol is like a synthetic THC, and I've given that in the hospital to patients before. It's not given often, but it's supposed to help stimulate an appetite. Okay. Which is amazing. If you can get somebody who doesn't have an appetite, who absolutely needs to eat, otherwise they're going to get a feeding tube put in them or something, great. We can stimulate an appetite and get them to eat without having further surgical intervention.
Yeah.
I think they even say, like, CBD can be an appetite suppressant, but I just started to kind of look. I could benefit from an appetite suppressant. That's why I said I look into this one a little bit. It's just, there's reasons for these different medications that they're making them, and seizures is a good example too. So they made a medication called Epidiolex. Epidiolex is a CBD based medication. I believe it's a CBD isolate, and we should probably get into those terms a little bit too. A CBD isolate is basically it's only CBD. It's isolated down to just the CBD form and put into a medication. And I believe it is used for a syndrome called Dravet syndrome. It's a seizure disorder, and I think there's one other seizure disorder. That's for our state, I believe. You can go online, and you can see people taking medical cannabis for these different seizure disorders. And maybe it's a, you know, when a person's in a grand mal seizure, they can't swallow, they can't inhale. Routes of ingestion are limited at that point, but they made a nasal spray. So people are in seizures and they get the nasal spray, and you can watch. I recommend you try to find some of these videos, and you can watch the changes. Parkinson's, a man who's having a really bad Parkinson's episode. I've seen these videos too, and he ingests cannabis, and you sit there and you watch him, like, having a still normal conversation on the couch, weeping because he hasn't had that ability to do that in so long.
Right.
It's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. And you've talked about anxiety is another big one for people, and pain.
Pain's huge. So pain with CBD, THC, if you look at the properties of all these cannabinoids, they seem to all have anti-inflammatory properties. Terpenes, a lot of terpenes in the plant have anti-inflammatory properties. A lot of people's pain simply comes from the inflammation process. So if we can take something other than Advil and Tylenol and stuff like that, take those medications, great, but you know, you can damage your liver from too much Tylenol. Ibuprofen can make your stomach bleed, you know. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just another option you could add into your wheelhouse then to reduce those. Same with, like, if you can take cannabis and reduce your narcotic intake because it helps alleviate some of that pain, you've done yourself a favor by getting off those narcs or lessening those narcs so you don't have as much constipation problems or developing an addiction kind of problems and stuff like that.
Your body doesn't have to filter through all of those.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing I'm just curious or interested in addressing too is so we're talking about marijuana and medical marijuana, and I know you talked the difference about maybe the purity of the medical marijuana. What else is, like, the difference? Is there because there's THC in all medical marijuana, like, otherwise it would just be CBD or whatever, right? Am I thinking about that correctly?
I think I understand what you're saying. So in the medical marijuana field, all those products are going to have THC in them. You'd have to get a CBD isolate to get away from the THC. Even if there's not a lot of THC in it, there's probably a little tiny amount.
Okay.
And most plants, cannabis plants, do have some THC in them. What else? How else do you want me to answer this, I guess?
I was kind of curious if you knew anything more about the medical marijuana, because I know I had a conversation with one of the people that works with the medical marijuana, and it's not just one thing. Like, you're going there, they're trying to figure out what balance
okay,
to get.
Okay, well, let's talk about that process a little bit.
Okay.
So my understanding of this with the loved ones that I know, you go to the doctor, you got to go to a doctor that's going to be able to provide you the permission that, yes, you have a disease that is on a allowed medical marijuana list you're going to end up paying this doctor like $250 for that consultation to get that approval letter. And then you're basically getting an approval letter to register with the state that, yes, you have a condition that allows you to get medical marijuana. I believe that is another $300 for the person who is not on disability. But if you have disability, that registration is $50. At that point, so you've seen the doctor, they verified that you have this illness, they're registered with the state to approve that illness for the medical marijuana program. You've then actually registered yourself with the state. You have to go to a dispensary at this point. The nearest one to Duluth here is Hibbing, I believe, and that's Leafline Labs. And at Leafline Labs, it's my understanding that you'll meet with like a nurse or a pharmacy technician of some sort who will be like your intake person. Talk to you about your problems, talk to you about solutions to those problems, and they might try to gear you towards, I know they have like three different products. There's a high THC with a little bit of CBD. There's the 1-to-1 THC to CBD, and there is also a high CBD, low THC. So three different products, and I always try to tell people, shoot for that 1-to-1 ratio on those products. But they'll help you adjust to the dose that you need. You could be like, I don't like the 1-to-1, let's try something different. And then I think that's how it would proceed at that point.
Okay, gotcha. And that's, so if somebody's got that, they have medical marijuana, it's, you know, totally legit. How does that work with, you know, if somebody has it, do they like need to carry stuff with them to say, hey, I'm...
I would never take your medical marijuana and carry it with you in the vehicle without the proper labeling, especially. There's a some kind of certificate that you're on the registry. You know, you'll have a certificate for the registry. And then definitely never put it outside of its proper packaging. That could get you into a lot of problems, I guess. You could have a caretaker go get your medicine for you. Like if you're a medical marijuana patient but you're disabled and can't leave your home, you can assign one person as your caretaker who has to get approved. They can go to the dispensary and get it for you and bring it back. But if that was opened at all, that could be a potential problem for that person who's the caretaker. Mm. So there's a lot of, unfortunately, we've even had patients who've come to the hospital and it's not an accepted thing in the hospital, and they've had to turn their medical marijuana in too.
Wow. Yeah. That's tough.
That's tough.
Wow.
Especially knowing what I know and seeing it happen and feeling powerless about it, you know.
So. Right. Yeah. Especially if that's the thing that's working for you.
Yeah. One person person claimed they had a long history of narcotic abuse in their life that was documented, and they wanted to pain control him with narcotics when all he wanted to do was use medical cannabis.
Right.
So there's, even though it's a legal, legit thing, it's still weird.
It's still a challenge. Wow.
And costs are not very accessible for people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Could be worse, but not really accessible for probably a lot of people who could really utilize it, or utilize it by illegal means. Where
it's not like you can go to like the pharmacy and pay your smaller amounts for the copays and deductibles.
Right.
And
stuff. Exactly. You're
paying full.
Yeah.
Full price.
Yeah.
Things will change, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, and more people, you know, it does come down to, if we've got so many people who are having such a good response, it starts to look like the medical system isn't on people's side if they don't help that change.
I think that's education's the major issue here, even in the medical field. When we start talking at the beginning of this, that a lot of doctors don't even understand this stuff yet. Hopefully, as the education happens, doctors want, genuinely, in my mind, doctors are good people. They want people to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors think differently than nurses do. This is a stigma on my part, maybe now. But ultimately, everybody who's in the medical field really wants to essentially help the patient the best way possible. And as we start seeing this stuff used more and more, we'll have a better understanding that this is a good way to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have hope for change that way.
Right. Well, yeah, and I've certainly heard of medical professionals who are saying, my gosh, I see patients come in, you know, and I can't prescribe it to them, but I see people come in and they have such great experiences who have it. So I'm hoping it gets to be something that I can suggest to other patients.
On the extreme end of things, there is, in like California, people who are treating their cancers and stuff with a very high concentrated form of basically cannabis. It's, they take a full plant extract, which is all the chemicals, all the natural chemicals in the plant, and they just, it kind of gets cooked down into like a very, very thick consistency. And like the dosing seems to be like the size of a grain of rice out of a syringe. People might pay $1,200-$1,500 for this one syringe of this really concentrated medicine. But there's this guy, I don't know too much about him, but he's all over the place in the folklore of all this, called Rick. His name is Rick Simpson. He made this thing called like Rick Simpson Oil, RSO, or Phoenix Tears, I've heard it called. I'm not quite familiar with the lingo on this stuff, but the idea is it's a very concentrated form of medicine, and he claims to have used it on many different people, and there's people all over the place with their own testimonials that talk about tumors and stuff being treated with this and the wonderful effects. And you know, I don't want to give people hope that it's a cure-all, but there's so much more that we don't know. I'm just fascinated by some of those studies that we see, and I can't wait to find out more. I mean, I could do my own research and talk to people and get an idea, but I want to be able to, like, here's the proof, you know? People, let's talk about this study, and it's not quite out there like that yet.
Right. Well, and people's stories are, you know, powerful. I mean, it doesn't mean it's going to work for you, but
you just like, you keep hearing more and more experiences, and
it drives
me to find out more.
Right, yeah. Exactly. If it is something that, in a sense, like you were saying with the cows who are sort of deficient, it's an interesting concept because it used to be just something that grew. It was just a thing.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people in the field talk about us having like a legitimate endocannabinoid deficiency problem, meaning that our endocannabinoid system just doesn't have what it takes to try to balance us out, and that's why we're getting, part of the reason why we get sicker and sicker and sicker, because we don't have this in our diet. Well, the study's there for that too, I don't know, but I think right. It's interesting to talk about at least. So.
Yeah, and it is, it's curious. It's like, well, how did we get this met years ago? But then if we think about just in general, you know, when we used to be living out in the world, we had a lot of different varieties of plants that don't even exist today.
People used to like have their vegetable, like I'm talking when we came over from England and established colonies and stuff, it was like people had their vegetable gardens, you know, for living off of. They had their medicinal gardens for living off of. Over here they grew grains and stuff, but hemp was one of those grain products and textile kind of products and stuff like that. And it was mandatory at times for people to grow those things as part of their tax collection, I guess, towards the government. You know, everybody had to do their part or whatever.
Interesting. Wow.
There's a $20 bill, I believe. An older $20 bill, one part of it, on the left side, it depicts hemp farmers harvesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah. See, isn't that fascinating?
It is.
How the world has changed. And yeah, we'll go backwards to go forwards, I guess.
We could talk about the different forms of applications.
You've mentioned a little bit, there's the nasal spray.
So I think the most common way when somebody thinks about cannabis or hemp is smoking.
Right.
The ground up flour, that is one route to get it. There's also creams, poultices, salves, that you can, you know, you can extract the oils out of the plant and mix the oils in with whatever salve recipe you want to use, and topical. When we start talking topicals, I like to bring up the CBD versus CBDA again, because there's anti-inflammatory properties in that as well, and CBDA is a wonderful anti-inflammatory topical agent, and a lot of times people aren't thinking about that now. So I see it as like another opportunity to add some more into it. There's two different kinds of CBD, basically. Tinctures are under the tongue. And that could be like an alcohol-based tincture. It could be an oil-based, like olive oil-based tincture. You could extract in your house, like into olive oil. Olive oil is a great product to pull cannabinoids out of flower and into the olive oil if you wanted to cook with it, or if you wanted to bake with it and things like that. Hmm. I don't have opportunity to do this stuff too much, so I just know about it. I've never made it olive oil based anything, I guess, but it sounds really cool because olive oil is extra virgin olive oil, I think, is the way to go. So we talked about inhalation. It could be smoking, ingestion, like recipes as far as cookies and edibles and stuff like that. But you could also, it doesn't have any cannabinoids or anything in it, but you can literally go to like Walmart now and buy hemp seed and eat it. Like we put it in our salads at home.
Hemp hearts. Yep, I hate hemp hearts.
I have seen like there's gel cap companies trying to get into the, they are in the realm already, but you start talking about the FDA regulating things and you're putting something in a gel cap, to me that looks like a problem until I know what the FDA is literally going to allow. And suppositories are a new thing too.
Okay.
But, you know, it's such a Wild West unregulated market that I'm hesitant to get into any of these things that the FDA is going to come slap my wrist over. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to keep it as basic as possible.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
That doesn't mean we're not in the planning mode to make moves, but we're playing it safe as a company. I guess we don't want to test the waters or anything, because you'll see companies out there that are claiming like, this will cure cancer and this will help with IBS and this will do this, but then the FDA comes in and says you can't say that kind of stuff. So
Right. When
you're looking at these products, like, hemp is hemp. It's not a medicine. It's advertising wise, you know, so cannabis and hemp, you can't say they're going to, you know, fix this or that. And basically if you want to play it safe, you're limited on your advertising or your marketing on that bottle by, this is full spectrum hemp extract or 2,500 milligrams of this or whatever. And you don't go into much more detail than that.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't say for ingestion on it. You just kind of know, you know,
mm-hmm.
you just kind of know what that's for.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
And I think those are pretty much the routes that you could go
Okay. For
getting it into your body.
And I know you talked about the whole, like, the food industry. You know, I'm seeing hemp and CBD oil in various things occasionally, and I wonder about that, because my question is, are you getting enough to have a real difference?
CBD seems to be in everything. It's popping up into, like, energy drinks.
Yeah.
They want to put it in beer. They want to put it in all over the place. And I don't think... So, in theory, if they got it all into our food supply and we're getting CBD with all our little meals and products that we take in, maybe we're getting a therapeutic dose. But I don't know for sure, to answer your question that
mm-hmm.
way.
And my concern would also be that if they're putting it in everything, are they getting a good quality oil? Like, are they getting good quality CBD? Are they getting a pure version of that?
Because
my guess is probably not.
So there's been all sorts of things about people going to buy CBD products, and maybe somebody, like a news reporter, is doing an investigation or something. And this happened in Wisconsin. I found some things recently in Wisconsin where somebody went and bought products and had these products sent off to a lab and tested, and some of them came back saying that there was CBD in them, but there was no CBD in them. Or an inaccurate amount listed compared to what they were putting on the bottle. So and that's due to the unregulated market.
Mm-hmm.
And it really puts a bad taste in my mouth for, like, trying to move forward with the industry.
Yeah.
There's great companies out there too that are doing the right thing, but it's those few bad eggs, you know, of course, that come in and have to ruin everything for
right.
sure.
Right.
But it's always a concern when you're looking at CBD products that you are checking out where that product came from. And a lot of times these bottles or products should have, like, some kind of QR code or website that you can go look at certificates of analysis or a COA.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I want to provide people with our products a COA that says there's no solvents in here, there's no heavy metals, there's no pesticides, fungicides, there, you know, it's got this amount of cannabinoids in it, it's got these terpenes in it. And a lot of times you can find that from the good products, but not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are uneducated are excited to buy CBD and they end up buying the wrong product that doesn't work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have any guidance on it. So just because CBD is not doing, like, maybe you bought a bottle of CBD and it's a good product, okay? Let's say everything's great with that product and you've taken it for 3 days and you're like, I'm just not feeling anything. In my mind, a lot of medications need to be loaded. Like, you can't, you know, like, an anxiety medication, sometimes 6 weeks before you start feeling any kind
mm-hmm.
of effect. I feel, and what I've learned a little bit of is that cannabinoids can kind of be the same way. CBD can be the same way. You're not really going to get your full therapeutic effect until your body meets its need, I guess.
Yeah.
And then
okay.
and
right.
then you're getting your proper dose. So maybe the dose you're taking in isn't the proper dose for you, but maybe it was for me. And it's really hard to harness that in like that.
Right.
So it's a confusing... I'm just confusing everybody, probably.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, because I think it's... I see what you're saying, and I think about it in two ways. One, if you're getting in your peanut butter, you're probably not getting enough to make a difference, and you don't know what you're getting anyway. And B, it's you need to give it a chance.
you know, because there's, it seems to me that sometimes when our body is so needing something, when it is the thing, that sometimes our body goes, it's like, oh, yes, you're here. I shall, you know, let you know that I know that this is a good thing, and you feel better, right? And then there's sometimes when you don't, because it needs to sort of fill up the
And I, the first time I started taking a sublingual tincture, I really noticed within myself about a week, 10 days, like, yeah, I think I really am noticing something here. But it wasn't a profound, like, and what I take is a full spectrum hemp extract. That is all the true plant properties and ratios that existed in the plant just condensed into this ratio. Now, if you want to make a THC-free product, you have now, like, if you want to take that 0.3% THC out of that product, that is no longer a full spectrum hemp extract.
Okay.
Because you've taken part of it away. And that is now a broad spectrum hemp extract. So something similar, but people love the idea of the THC-free. Nurses, EMTs, paramedics, people who are afraid of drug tests and things like this that want benefits, but they don't want THC in their systems. You know, that's a neat looking product to them, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go further and refine that down to, like, just get the THC out to have, like, a THC isolate. Not in our state by any means. And I don't know how many states are actually doing that. But you can get a CBD isolate the same way. And it's all about refining things down, boiling down, cooking down to get to that point. And that CBD isolate has its properties that are great and has its benefits. But referring back to what I was talking about, the entourage effect, you lose the entourage effect as you lose these chemicals out of it. So a lot of times people are, will, like, companies will buy a CBD isolate and infuse it with terpenes, infuse it back into products and try to build, like, that entourage effect. And I think there's a way it works like that, but it's still not your natural ratios from the original plant.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Interesting. I love how we take things apart and then try to put them back.
We always do that. ruin a good thing. So, and I did want to mention, I know we talked about a few different terpenes here. There's a wide variety of terpenes. There's actually, could be like over 200 terpenes in the cannabis plant, which I find amazing because I only focus on a few of them that I really like. And then flavonoids, they kind of make that taste. You know, terpenes are the aroma. Flavonoids give cannabis its taste. So if, like, you were to juice it and stuff like that. And the flavonoids are the least, are what we know the least of in the cannabis plant. Flavonoids exist in other plants too, but flavonoids within the cannabis plant are barely researched at all.
Okay.
So I have the least amount of information on this topic. But what I do know, there's 23 identified flavonoids in the cannabis plant. Flavonoids tend to have antioxidant properties, anti-cancer properties in other plants. So, like, broccoli has flavonoids. That's what they, when they talk about broccoli having antioxidants, that's flavonoids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, basically, there's two that are very specific to cannabis, and they're interestingly called canaflavin A and canaflavin B. I don't know much more than the names. I've just actually begun my research into this more myself.
Okay.
And it just doesn't, a lot of it isn't existing out there. So you look at other flavonoid studies from different plants and stuff and kind of get an idea of what's going on.
Right.
Oh, we can talk about the industrial hemp program a little bit in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
I'm licensed to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture in their industrial hemp pilot program. The state regulates the hemp growing industry and processing industry through the Department of Agriculture. So when I sought my licenses and stuff, I had to go through them in order to get that. So they call it a pilot program, but it's been in existence, I believe, since 2014. When the 2014 Farm Bill came out, that kind of initiated all these pilot programs. And now the 2018 refine that 2018 Farm Bill refine that to even further to be more beneficial for us growers, leaving out some of the details in there, but it made it more clear, better, clearer picture for us and kind of gave us more guidance on it.
Okay.
Yeah, so the states, our state's been at this for 5 years now, so it's our first year growing within it, but so there's a lot of other farmers in the state. There's a bigger hemp market in the state than people actually are realizing. Our neighbors to the east, Wisconsin, are top of the nation, right up in the top of the nation as far as hemp growers and amount of land that they're growing and how progressive they are in that market and stuff too.
Wow, that's so interesting that Wisconsin surprises me. And you personally, or just with your farm, you guys are, so it's in your first year, and you're ultimately looking to be an organic farm, and so you're going to be producing an organic product, which of course...
We can't call ourselves organic yet, because we have to have a farm up and running that the USDA or whatever certification body comes in and looks at your farm and says, yeah, you guys are running an organic operation here. To me, that term organic can get a little unnecessary, because I get this, the what's behind organic, it means a lot of good things, but people are ruining that as well too. Like, organic can be driven into the ground with some bad eggs too.
Mm-hmm.
I can show you the certificate of our products. I can't call myself organic, but what I can do is show you, here's the lab testing of our products, here's what's in there. I can't call it organic, but it gives the same picture. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would call ourselves natural, maybe, or something
Along
that. I want to use the organic term when I can, but we have to wait some time to get that certification going.
Right, and in order to get that certification, you have to do all of the practices that lead you there, so you're doing the thing. It's not like you just say, today, I'm going to be an organic farmer.
Correct.
You have to be doing that practice for a while before
you have to
that
prove,
term
you have to prove like
used.
You're acting like it.
Right,
you got
exactly.
an operation like that. Yep.
Right, so that's awesome. When somebody's looking for a good product, what terms should they be looking for? What questions should they be asking? You know, if they have a chance to talk to the actual company, or just when they're trying to choose one, how do they find the cleanest one?
So let's talk about some of these terms real quick. There's CBD isolate, full spectrum hemp extract, and hemp seed oil. Some of these things you commonly see, and a lot of times people will look at that stuff and be like, huh? What does this all mean? If a person thinks that they're going to get CBD out of hemp seed oil, they're mistaken. Hemp seed oil is cold-pressed hemp seeds, and there is no cannabinoids in that pressed seed. It'll make a wonderful oil for cooking or a carrier oil, but it will not contain CBD in there. So if you're buying a product that says hemp seed oil and you think you're getting hemp extract, you're not.
Okay.
So that's one thing that I like to encourage people to try to... avoid. Hemp seed oil has its place, don't get me wrong. Hemp seed oil can be a carrier oil to be infused with full spectrum hemp extract.
Okay.
So it's probably have more of a bitter taste, but it works well like that. And you'll get your CBD then from the full spectrum.
Okay. But if you're cooking with it, you're not getting it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So full spectrum hemp extract would be ideal to know that you're getting not just CBD, but you're getting that full entourage effect from the plant. If you're looking for a THC-free product, that's great. It should be listed on the bottle as THC-free, but know that that is no longer a full-spectrum product then.
Mm-hmm.
As well, it's always important to look at the certificate of analysis, and most companies have them. If they don't have a certificate of analysis to look at, stay away from them, because what are they trying to hide? You know, or maybe they have information on their website or whatever, but everybody should be open and honest with what's going on with these products, because bad practices can lead to bad health. There's like an organic product called neem oil, and neem oil is like a leaf polish, okay? And it's organic, it's natural. It is put on cannabis plants, not during the flowering stage, but during the early vegetative stage, to help control bugs and things like this. You can use this and still get an organic certification because it is an organic product. However, if this product isn't properly flushed, meaning like watered out, and if it's used in late in the stage and it's on the actual flowers, people can get real sick. I'm going to butcher this word, but I believe the chemical in neem oil is called azadirachtin or something like that. And there's a poisoning that people get from that. And I can't contradict what doctors are saying here by any means, but I have seen patients go to the hospital for what they call a hyperemesis cannabis syndrome, or a cyclic nausea and vomiting, where it's weird. They get sick, they vomit, and they need to have a hot shower to somehow soothe them. I know it sounds odd, but it's always the hot shower and the cyclic nausea and vomiting. I've also looked up this poisoning from this azadirachtin, I'm butchering the word again, but it's very similar. And I wonder sometimes if a person comes into the hospital, because they're always chronic users. okay. of marijuana. And that means they're always smoking a lot or they're mm-hmm. ingesting a lot. So they're getting a lot more of this chemical in. And due to the black market, you can't ever know what you're buying. So you take this junk in and you get sick from it, and they're blaming cannabis.
Wow. Okay.
When, yes, it's on the cannabis, but it's poor practices.
Right. Yeah. If you put antifreeze in your ice cream, it's not the ice cream that's you keep you sick. It's the antifreeze.
Yeah. So I want to see these certificates, and I encourage people to look in these certificates for pesticides, molds, heavy metals, all this kind of testing to make sure that that is not in the product. And if it is in the product, stay away from it.
How would you get that? Like, is it something that a company's going to have on their site, or do you like literally have to ask them?
A lot of times those QR codes exist on the bottles.
Okay.
And that you can scan with your phone. That QR code, that's that box looking thing, will bring you to that batch's certificate of analysis online.
Okay.
So my father-in-law bought a product not too long ago, did market research, and scan the bottle, and it brought us to the website to look at the certificate.
Okay.
And you're assuming that that product is genuinely matching that certificate. You know, you a little bit of an honor system there. Mm-hmm. I couldn't verify, yes, this is 100% to this. I just have to trust, you know. If you had the opportunity to send that product off and get it tested, that would be ideal, but that's not realistic.
Right, you know? Right. Well, and with the regulation and everything, like you say, everything is, you can, you know, go back to where it was grown and which field, I imagine, and
ideally, like, for people's safety, I want to have all these things established where you can just trust this product by the industry's regulated. You know, mm-hmm. once we get to that point, it'll be a lot of growers and businesses are afraid of the FDA coming in, and I get why, because it could disrupt their business probably. Mm-hmm. But I kind of want to learn a way to play alongside the FDA once they come in, because they do have the best interest as far as like regulating products for consumption and stuff like that.
Oh, and I just was curious, you had mentioned this mold in some of the things we want to be careful of. Is that mold just meaning in the processing and not plants not taken care of well?
Yeah, it's more or less where you get mold from. So like, we're doing a home extraction on our property. If let's say another person was doing it on their property, and when they went to dry their plants, they piled them up in a big pile in humid Minnesota, and they didn't dry out properly. And maybe they don't even know how to identify mold on the plant, so they don't recognize it. But they go through the extraction process, and suddenly they've extracted this mold right alongside of it.
Okay, right.
So when you're trying to make a medicinal grade product, I guess, you know, these precautions need to be in place. And that's a concern of mine for the general public too, is like, boy, if you're buying something, you really need to know what's in it. And you got to have those safety features and stuff like that. But it's not regulated.
Right. Okay. Right now, you don't have a product yourself. This is all in the process for you. You're researching how to create the best, right? That's where you're at with this.
As far as our farm goes, we are growing plants right now.
Okay.
To make a product.
Okay.
But that stage will take some time before we can harvest and make our own product.
Okay.
So we don't have anything to sell by the end of the year.
Okay.
We'll have products.
That's good. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And then tell me the name again. What will people look for? I know you said you're looking for wholesale, but you're also going to be doing your own products too.
So we're looking to always connect with retail stores and stuff too, to explore our retail options, as far as if we find enough of a demand that people want a good, clean, craft CBD product like we offer, we'll, of course, adjust to that. But we just don't know enough of the retail market right now to fully jump our business into that this year. We do understand the wholesale market a lot more, so that's kind of why we're taking that approach. But we are ever increasing in our interest to connect with retail stores and partner and make a product with somebody we want to make our own product, but we want to connect with these stores and see it on shelves.
Right. Okay.
And we're going to be getting into the balms, the tinctures, and things like that. And I don't know much more from there, but that's kind of what we like the idea of pain relief a lot.
Okay.
And so those creams and balms and stuff seem to be very helpful.
Okay.
And then we don't just mix, like, we'll take a full spectrum hemp extract and mix it with a lot of wonderful oils and herbs that we already are aware of that people use.
So. Okay. Okay. So for now, it's just about learning about you and what you do, and how do people kind of, if they want to keep track of what you're doing.
Sure. We have a website. It's Holistic Wellness Services, or www.holisticwellnessservices.life. If anybody wanted to contact me personally about the cannabis nurse education or just learning more in general, it's nate@holisticwellnessservices.life. Funny story there. If you ever make a business, try to shorten your email address. I find myself filling in my email address all the time. So it's nate@holisticwellnessservices. And by the time I'm done writing, I'm out of space. And then everybody's like, what is this dot life?
Exactly.
So I'm a nurse, so I'm like, dot life was one of those weird options they gave me to when I was making my email address. And I was like, oh, this sounds great.
Interesting.
But a lot of websites won't even take dot life as like a email address.
Right. Oh, wow.
They don't recognize it as a...
it's not on that list of options yet. Okay.
So the website, we have a Facebook page too as well, Holistic Wellness Services, and any of those routes would be just fine to get a hold of me.
Okay, fantastic. And like you said, you're willing to talk to people, do education.
I am a big proponent of education, and I would love to have more opportunities to be able to educate in this.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you. I do think this is such an important... So many people are having so many benefits that we need to be able to understand it, and it needs to not be stigmatized, and people need access. So
absolutely.
I'm huge for getting this information out there. So I appreciate you taking your time to do the education piece, because
I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Their web address again is holisticwellnessservices.life. So remember the dot life part. Check them out on Facebook. They've got some great pictures. And when I post the episode, I will also post some pictures of that as well. So if you're getting this through email and you like pictures, go check it out. I took Nate's suggestion and looked up some of the seizure videos and with little kids, and it's kind of amazing. I can't imagine what it would be like being a parent watching your kid go through that, and then to have something that would just chill them out and calm them down and bring them back. That's pretty amazing. One of the things that I, Judy, want to personally comment on that stuck out to me during my conversation with Nate, and I've heard some similar things from other folks as well, is the story that he talked about with the person going to the hospital and their medical marijuana wasn't something that the hospital approved. And so they took it away to potentially give this person narcotics, which was something that the person had an addiction issue with earlier. And I think that brings a lot of stuff up for me for multiple reasons of questions and concerns. One of them just being how much power the hospital has to say, yeah, this thing that you do, we're not going to let you have it. This isn't okay with us. And even though it's totally legal and totally legit and they've done everything they need to do. And then to put the person back on something that has been a harmful substance to me. Again, this is a Judy thing, but to me, that doesn't fall under the do no harm. And I see that it's very concerning. And I think about that in, you know, you might think of your own family members or people that you know, but I think about that also for myself. And I've talked about this in the podcast before. I don't respond to painkillers and I have no experience with medical marijuana. So I have no idea if that's something that would help me. But if I were, and I was in the hospital and that was given to me, that was taken away to give me drugs that make me sick and do not do a thing for me, would be a massive cause for alarm and hugely stressful and fear invoking. So I don't know. You know, my question that comes out of this is, what do we do? And please, if you're listening, please weigh in to answer these questions that I have. This is part of the reason that I do the podcast, is to help people, you know, find the things that they need that work for them that they might not find in a traditional system or whatever the case might be. But how do we help? How do we help the system move along faster? How do we help us advocate as patients in like a situation like that? What do we do? Do we just have to know our medical facility, or can we help the medical facility see the situation? I wonder if this person in this situation that he was talking about, if they were sitting there with a lawyer or, you know, a doctor or various advocates, would they have been able to take it away, or would that have overridden the situation? And from everything that I know and understand, it seems to me that that shouldn't have to be the case. So I sincerely ask, how do we do this? How do we help ourselves? How do we help the system? And like Nate says, education, it is the way. And I think he's absolutely right. But how do we help that happen? How do we help doctors who have the education? How do we help them advocate so they don't have repercussions in situations where they do find things that work and they want to pass that on to their patients? Whatever the case might be, would love your thoughts. Thank you so much. Please check out the other podcast episodes at wellnessrenpodcast.com. Don't forget, if you're an Amazon shopper, you can also go to the website and support the podcast and click through to Amazon. And your purchases from Amazon, no cost to you, a little tiny portion does go to support the podcast. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. Take great care. We'll see you next week. And until next time, may you continue to find pieces that fit with grace, ease, and success into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care.